I'd like to share with you a talk this morning. It's about 45 minutes, so make yourself comfortable. The theme is about the path of understanding and love. It said that it's not possible for us to love ourselves, our loved one, our spouse, our parents, our brother and sister, and our friend, if we don't understand. So understanding is like a requisite for being able to love well. It's definitely true that we all want to be loved and to love well. Difficult part is how. It's hard to love well. It's like our children, and you know how nowadays with the fashion, they love these fashion designer jeans where it has hole and it's like a piece of rag, but that's the fashion design. And during Christmas, we go and buy them a new Levi jean. That doesn't work. Or our spouse loves to eat Italian food, and we take them to a Chinese restaurant. However, I think it's probably easy to understand the fashion that our loved one wants to wear and the taste of food that they want to eat. That's probably straightforward. But if you're talking about something at a deeper level, like what makes them happy, what makes them sad, it's probably going to take some time and effort for us to be able to get to that level. Do we have any training that allows us to be able to do that? Well, I'd like to tell you a story. The beginning of the year, I heard on NPR that Jill Carroll, the reporter for the Christian Science Monitor, she was working in Iraq, and she got captured by these insurgents, and she was held captive for like 3 months. And for a while there, you know, her family was really worried, and everybody was worried. Didn't know whether she was going to be able to be free. Luckily, in her case, she was released after like 3 months in Iraq. She finally flew home. So during her first interview here in the U.S., she's from the Boston area, they asked her, how was the experience? Can you share with us? She said that during the 3 months that she was captured in Iraq and held hostage, she said that you know, there was a lot of things that she took for granted. To be able to step outside anytime, to feel the sun directly on your face, to see the whole sky, these are luxuries that we don't just appreciate every day. She said that's what she missed. If you're listening to that, and you're listening at a deep level, that's what we have now. Any of us can walk out and feel the sun on our face, to look at the whole sky. But we don't miss it. We don't appreciate it. Why is it? Jill herself has the answer. But she learned it the hard way. It took her 3 months to be captive and lost that freedom, lost that opportunity to be able to feel the sun shine on her face. Life is always present. It is us that's not present in life. At the same level, we have our health. Most of us here are healthy. Do we feel blessed? Do we have a family? Do we feel loved? Do we have a shelter over our head? Do we have a meal on the table? Do we feel blessed? Not all the time. And why is that? There are people in this world having a shelter over our head and having 3 meals on the table a day is magical. What is it that we have all of that? But we don't feel happy all the time. We don't feel lucky to be in that situation. Is it only when we don't have it anymore? Well, hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully during the practice today, we're going to figure out a way to be able to remember all of these wonderful gifts from life, from our family that we have, and be able to have an appreciation. And don't lose that appreciation as we get distracted in our life. I would like to share you another story I read a few years ago. The story was written by a mindfulness meditation practitioner, and he was writing down when he was young, when he was a teenager. He said that at that time his family lived near this beautiful lake. From time to time he'd go by himself out to the lake and play. That's what teenager and young boy does. So one day he took off to the lake and played as usual. And after a few hours, he didn't come home. So his dad became worried. And he went out to the lake and looked for him. He went and looked around the lake, and he saw his son's footstep walk right into the water, but didn't find his son anywhere. So he started to panic. He ran around the lake looking for his son. After an hour or so, couldn't find him. So he's become really worried and really upset. But he didn't have any choice but to go home and maybe call 911. When he got home, he saw his son is already home. So the dad was so happy, but in the same time, he was so furiously mad. And the next thing he did was he took the son into the bathroom and beat the son black and blue with his belt. After a while, as he calmed down, he realized that he's hurting his son. After a while, he figured out that he loved his son, but what he's doing is hurting him. And then he stopped to attend to the wound. And as he's attending to the wound, the dad keeps saying, "I beat you because I love you so much." It seems to be an extreme story, but it's true. A lot of time in our life, we start out with a good intention. Definitely his dad wasn't intent to hurt his son. But with strong emotion, and doesn't know how to deal with strong emotion, he's hurting his son out of love. Back then, I learned that love equals pain. Love is the same thing as violence, and I suffer. And he said he didn't know whether that's the kind of love that he wants. But I think we can relate to the story. A lot of time in our lives, our intention is genuinely good. But under pressure, under strong emotion, somehow we end up causing more suffering than love, causing more harm. How many times in our life we said to ourselves, we won't be angry, and we won't raise our voice. And guess what we're doing when we're angry? We raise our voice. During a situation where there's some confrontation and people get upset, is to raise your voice. Anybody know that. But a lot of times we end up doing it. So we're not making the situation any easier. Because of what? Because of strong emotions. Most of us are ill-equipped to deal with strong emotions. When strong emotions come up, it's like a storm come and take us away, whichever direction is blowing. And because we're not trained, we are ill-equipped to deal with strong emotion. So, it doesn't matter how many times you promise yourself that you won't scream when you're angry. It doesn't matter how much you promise yourself you will be more patient. When strong emotion arrives, just take you away. It's hard. It's not easy to deal with. So life is very challenging. There's the best part of life where we're happy and where we relax. But there's also the part of life that's stressful and hard to deal with. If we look at our past history and see are we ready to deal with the up and down of life, what kind of training do we have? So we spent about 6 years in elementary school, most of us. We spent about 2 years in middle school, spent about 4 years in high school, and then 4 years in college, and some of us even have higher degrees. So we spent a lot of time in school, spent something like 16 years in average in school, learning to be a knowledgeable person in the society, be a productive person in the society, to guarantee we have a good career, to guarantee that we have a comfortable material life. And the result is exactly that. A lot of us have a good career, we have a home, we have a car, we have everything that we need. So material-wise, we're doing an excellent job. Well, mentally, how are we doing? Spiritually, how are we doing? What kind of training do we have to deal with the up and down of life? Not a lot. No wonder why we are not ready. A lot of us are ill-equipped. We don't have the skill that we need to deal with strong emotion, to deal with the up and down of life, and how to make our life more joy and peace. Living in the Northern Virginia area is known for speed and high stress. Everything has to be fast. Everything has to be done now. I once met this person, and he gave me his business card. There's like six different ways for me to contact him. I look at it and say, you can run, but you cannot hide. I mean, he has his office phone, his cell phone, his fax, his pager, email. It's amazing. Nowadays, it seems like the more thing that you put on your business card, the better you are. It's like the more prestige you are. And because we're not trained, I mean, it's really not our fault that we're not trained. A lot of times, what we do doesn't seem to cause the situation to be better. I don't believe any of us want to suffer. But how we go about doing it seems to cause more suffering. And I don't think it's our fault. Because we don't know. Either we don't know how, or we don't know that we're causing more suffering. Just like the dad hitting the son. If dad knows that he's causing more suffering, he wouldn't do it. You know, he's loving his son. So why are we continuing to cause more suffering when our intention is to be happy, to be loved, and to love others well? So let's spend some time today and investigate that. What I like to do as part of this investigation is I like to show you a movie. By the way, years ago, there wasn't any PowerPoint. There wasn't any movie to try to convince me. It's like, this is the way, and we learn. But now, to make it interesting, we got a movie. So I'm going to show you a quick 26-second movie clip. It's going to be quick. You've got to really pay attention, okay? The movie clip is on a group of people passing the ball. So they have this basketball, and they're passing. And there are two groups. One group wearing white shirt, and the other group wearing black shirt. And what I'd like for you to do is count how many times the white shirt group passing the ball. Everybody clear on the instruction? And see who got the number right at the end. You up for the challenge? I think it's easy enough. Got to do something to make the movie show up on that screen. So I'm going to pay attention, start counting the people with the white shirt. I'm going to give you a few seconds to think about how many times you passed the ball. Anybody like to share how many times?
14.
13. 15.
13.
14. 14. How many times do you have?
14.
17? 14. So somehow during this 26 seconds, we have a few of these answers. And by the way, we got warning that it's going to be short, and we know exactly what we're going to focus on. Anybody see anything else?
A guy in an ape suit walking through it.
What?
There's a guy in an ape suit who walked right through a mall throwing the ball.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
What?
Something in an ape suit?
can you repeat for everybody here?
There's a person that was dressed up like an ape and walked through, everybody wanted to throw him the ball. He just walked right through.
Is he dreaming? Or are we dreaming? So who saw what he's talking about? Raise your hand. So it seems like you're the only one. So let's look at the video again. This time, just watch the movie. Don't focus on counting. Okay, he's not dreaming.
That's great.
So how is that that we miss a big thing like that? This is a good size ape that's walking.
Focus on the one thing and not the whole picture.
Walking out to the center of the screen and then even making fun at us and then walk past. How is it that we miss? We know that the task at hand is to count the people with the white shirt passing the ball. We know that. But is it at the expense of excluding everything else? Well, that's how our mind works. By the way, if you didn't see the ape, you're fine. You're normal. He's not normal.
Good practice. At the time, I wouldn't have saw him.
Video was made by a psychology teacher and wanted the university to prove that point. That's the way our mind works. Is when we are focusing in something, unfortunately, we are excluding the rest of life. That should cause some concern. If a big thing like a gorilla walking out, making fun, we didn't even see it making fun, and then walking past, that's a major thing. And we didn't even see it. What else did we miss? And this is not like we're not watching the movie, this is like we're paying attention. That's scary.
So the question is, what were you doing that you were able to count and see him?
Let me share with you, if you're mindful, then you will see everything. Sometimes you think you're mindful, but you're really not mindful. You are focusing. There's a big difference between being focused and being mindful. Matter of fact, focus is 100% in the other direction of being mindful, because focus is like you are zooming in and you're excluding things. Being mindful is you're aware of that and everything else. Just by our practice, when we say we are sitting and be aware of the breath, it's not that we aware of the breath and excluding sound and sense and temperature and anything else. No. We're aware of the breath, and because we're aware of the breath, we're aware of everything. That's a test of how mindful we are. We think we're mindful, but no, we are focusing. We're not mindful. In my class, I usually show it on the first class because people are not mindful yet. Don't know how to be mindful yet. Like 99%, all of them won't see it. If I was showing at the last class, everybody would see it. I hope they would see it. Using counting seems to be a big difference. But when you're aware of the breath, it's the same way. You're aware of the breath, you really know the breath is breathing in, breathing out, it's the same way. It's not any more harder to count than to be aware of the breath. Our mind is really quick. The issue is not our mind is busy counting and it cannot do anything else. Our mind is very powerful. It can do a lot. But it's really us. By the way, he doesn't have any more power than you are. Being mindful is not that hard if we know what mindfulness is. This will show really clear, I don't have to say much, there's a big difference between being focused and being mindful. Well, let's take a look a little bit more about how our mind works. Maybe we understand why this is the case. A while back, I was reading a scientific report on how the mind works. It said that every second we receive something like 2 million pieces of information through our eyes, through our nose, through our tongue, through our ear, through our body, you know, all the senses. We receive like 2 million pieces of information. That's a lot. When we look at the flower, do we see flower? No. We see color. We see shape. We see light and darkness. And when it hit our mind, because of our consciousness, we know that's a flower. So we say flower, but really we don't see flower. We see something totally different. Our mind does that translation for us. And they said that when we receive millions of pieces of information in, our mind will have to go through a data reduction. And it does the filtering, and sometimes it does editing too. And that's exactly what happened. You see all these images in the movie. You see the white people, black shirt people, you see this ball. And our mind said, well, I suppose I'll count the white people passing the ball. So it's deleting information now. Irrelevant. So it never show up in your consciousness. And what you end up with is now that 2 million piece of information, 134-bit information is left. So it goes from 2 million down to 134. That's a lot of data reduction. And so we don't really see the whole thing that we see. We don't really hear the whole thing that we hear. We don't really feel what we're supposed to feel. And keep in mind, that's the way the mind works. So there's a conclusion. What we are experiencing is not the entire reality of life. We can only experience a portion of reality if we're not mindful. And most of the time when we experience something, we think we experience the entire reality. No, we're not. Reality is different from Nisha. Guaranteed. Because it's going through a different mindset. It's being filtered a different way. It's being looked at a different way. You know, Ray may look at the flower and say, it's beautiful. Nisha said, eh, it's okay. You know? Ray may think it's too warm in here. And Nisha said, that's right. I've got to be aware of that. Even when we are mindful, the way we experience life is different for the next person. So when our loved ones say, it's beautiful, he or she may not mean the same way you said it's beautiful. And we got to be mindful. Since you got love experiment, let's try another experiment. This is a picture of a very juicy lemon. I would like to invite you to close your eyes. And imagine this. Imagine in front of you a freshly picked organic ripe lemon. You can smell the fragrance coming off the fruit and see the bright yellow color of the skin. It has a slight shine to it, and you notice the texture. It feels smooth. Imagine the lemon is on a cutting board in front of you. Now take out a knife and cut the lemon. Then cut the lemon into a wedge As you cut the lemon, you see little juice dribble onto the board. Now, looking at the wedge of the lemon in front of your eyes, you can see the little sack full of juice, and the smell is strong. Some of the juice dribble onto your hand as you anticipate taking a bite before it starts to drip to the floor. You bring the lemon wedge up to your face, open your mouth, and bite down on the juicy sack. The lemon juice bursts into your mouth, and you taste the bitter tang of the lemon juice on your tongue as it flows around your mouth while you chew. Please open your eyes. So do you find yourself more saliva in your mouth now than before? Okay, show me the lemon. The lemon is not mine. But just talking you through, we actually salivate because it's almost like we're eating the lemon. We're tasting the juice of the lemon. So how is that possible? The lemon is not real. You are making it out of nothing. And we actually have a body sensation to prove it too. And a strong one. Well, this is definitely not anything that you haven't experienced before. I mean, when you're hungry and you come up to the cafeteria and you stand at the food line, the same way. But at least the reality is right there, right? You're about to taste it now. We're sitting here. There's no lemon, but we have the same result. I think we can come up with another conclusion. Depend on our mind state. Our life experience can be a product of our mind, not always from the reality. Let me share with you another story. Back in the 60s, in the Washington, D.C. area, there was a businessman. He traveled to India. And you know, back then, having a white tiger in the National Zoo is a big thing, because white tiger is very rare. They are endangered species. So this businessman, he traveled to India, and he bought for $10,000 a 2-year-old white tiger. Then he transported back here, and it was kept in the Washington, D.C. National Zoo. For years and years, the white tiger was kept in this cage about 12 feet by 12 feet. The tiger is getting larger and larger, so we had to raise money to build a real habitat. With pond, with rock to climb, with grass, a little bit more land. So they took a year or so to raise money, and finally they have the money, and they build this beautiful habitat. And on the opening day, they have a big celebration, and they release Mohini, is the name of the tiger, into this beautiful habitat. It's much larger. And you know what Mohini did? She walked into the habitat and looked around, and then walked to a corner of the habitat, and then paced back and forth in this 12 by 12 feet area for the rest of her life. Well, we say, well, that's because it's a tiger. It does that. Well, is it? In our life, our mind is very, very influential on how we live. And it doesn't matter how vast, how big, how beautiful the area is, if our mind is small. That's all we can enjoy. This is why when you are upset, you are full of worry, a meal doesn't taste that good. It's the same way. This tiger has a beautiful habitat, but can't really enjoy it. All it can enjoy is this 12 by 12 feet area. Because it's been trained. That's the way it's been lived for years and years. Our mind is a similar way. If we're not careful, I think we can enjoy it. Are you sure? It's a lesson to be learned from the white tiger. Are we really free, like we think? Are we really free in making a decision, to making a choice? When you go shopping this Christmas, are you really free to pick out the present? Or are you being dictated by all the commercial, by the way you were raised? That's the question that we need to contemplate on. whether we are really free from our desire, from our greed. You'd be amazed. Mindfulness meditation is a practice that become quite popular nowadays. There's a lot of evidence showing that it's quite beneficial. And you got people from all walk of life practicing it. You got people that's in jail practicing mindfulness meditation because they will be less violent. You got people that in hospital that practicing mindfulness meditation to heal faster. The National Institute of Health has published a lot of reports. Practicing mindfulness meditation, not only you heal your mind, but you can heal your physical body. Our mind and body are so close together. In the Eastern tradition, there is no two, there's just one. Mind and body is one, it's not two. In the Western tradition, we were talking about mind and body like two different places. It's one. What we do with our mind affects a lot with our body. And as you can see through the experience that we went through with the juicy lemon, just think about our physical body responding. In the same way, if we work our physical body too hard, it's directly affect our mind. There's a lot of documents that show that. I show you here a number of pictures that I collected, say teaching mindfulness meditation in school. This picture here is doing PE. They're teaching meditation to the kids. This picture right here is Boston Eagle. Their owner paid his meditation coach a lot of money to teach them meditation. And you know why? Because they want to make sure high paid player play well with each other so they can win the game. So not all people are using mindfulness meditation to practice to be enlightened or to better handle their life. Mindfulness meditation is viewed as a self-discovery process. You practice to be able to understand yourself more, as we've seen here. Understand how our mind works, how body and mind related, so we can better manage our life. If we know how our mind works, then we can better be ready to deal with life situations. So today we have learned a number of things. We have learned to sit quietly and be aware of our breath as a sitting meditation, and we've learned through a walking meditation. You know the principle of these two. First is we need to slow down. We are slowing down to give us a better chance, a better opportunity to experience life, because most of the time we are moving so fast. And the second part of mindfulness meditation is to look at things at a deeper level to understand. Because if we look at things at the skin level, you won't be able to see the wisdom that we need for life. So let me take a little bit of time to talk about slowing down. I have not met anyone that said that he or she is not busy, whether you are a teenager or you are an adult. And in fact, I met some retiree that's very busy. We always have things that we have to do. So let me share with you a wonderful writing about taking your time. Today, it is not that people are unmannerly or inconsiderate by nature. We just don't have the time to be otherwise. If I'm rushing to catch the bus and you stand in my way, I don't mean any harm, but I push you aside. This is happening everywhere, every day. People just rush around. And when we rush around, we don't see others. They are just phantoms we can pass right through. Perhaps we say, excuse me, beg your pardon, I didn't mean to hurt you. Or perhaps we don't. We are in too much of a hurry. The pace is so fast now that we simply take rudeness, stress, and lack of attention for granted. This modern civilization of ours has developed a mania for speed. It's a kind of epidemic in which millions of people are caught. And when we become helplessly caught in a universal compulsion, it rarely occurs to us whether we are caught, let alone, and how we can get free. Almost everyone today complains there is not enough time. What we actually mean is a little different, not enough time to do everything we want. Oddly, when we want to do more than we have time for, the first thing we try to get more of every morning is sleep. Usually, of course, because we got to bed late from trying to fit more into the night before, so we get up a little late, but just at the last moment, and then hurry through the rest of the day trying to catch up. So we start the day behind in a hurry, and of course the pace doesn't stop at home. If anything, it accelerates as the day wears on. We dash for the bus, or battle with rush hour traffic, and get to work just barely on time, or even a minute or two late. There's no time to smile or say good morning, no time to see who's in the office. One time I had to go to an unfamiliar big city hospital for a minor ear infection. I was amazed at the scene. Everyone there, staff and patient alike, seemed ready to explode. The staff, overwhelmed by the sheer number of people who needed to be attended to, dart in and out. The patient couldn't dart, of course, but you could see by their faces that they too had no time to spend waiting for hours in order to be sent to another room to wait some more. When I was finally ushered into an examination room, the doctor did check both of my ears carefully, but I don't think he saw the face between them. Faster, faster, faster means more and more impersonal. When the day goes like this, by the time evening comes, you have been going so fast all day that you cannot change gear. You have been speeding since you got up in the evening, you whip back home like a boomerang. Not only that, you are tired, drained from the pace of it. By the time you enter your home, you're ready to blow up at the very next person you meet. It's not because you are a bad-tempered person, and just as important, it's not because that's the way life is. This is what speed does to us, to anybody. So the practice of mindfulness meditation is not about slowing down. People can misunderstand and say, well, I can't slow down. Why do I need to slow down? Can I practice mindfulness meditation at my pace? Well, if you are an expert in mindfulness meditation, then you could. But since we are beginners, we need to slow down to allow us an opportunity to experience life. That's what slowing down is about. Mindfulness meditation itself doesn't require to slow down. In the meditation tradition, our mind we view as a lake of water. When the mind is calm, then it can reflect its surroundings. But when the mind is disturbed, distracted, you can't see what's going on. You can't see your surroundings. That's the same way with your mind. So we advise people to slow down, to allow the mind to be calm, so it can reflect clearly what life experience is. This is why we are healthy, but we don't appreciate the fact that we're healthy. We're so distracted. We're going to go and have lunch, and that's not an issue for any of us here, but we don't feel blessed. There are people in the world that they worry about where the next meal comes from. It's the truth. So slowing down is essential in the practice to allow us to be present. Give us more opportunity to be able to experience to be present. The practice also asks us to be mindful. And here we advise people to use the breath. Actually, in the mindfulness meditation practice, there are four objects of meditation. The breath is not just the only one, but it's the easiest one. And we advise people to be aware of your breath. Because, number one, the breath is always with you. the breath is very dynamic. If you are mindful and you pay attention to the breath, you won't see any breath the same way. They are different. I'll challenge you to find two breaths the same way. This moment, this is your mind state, this is your body state. The next moment is totally different. So how can you experience that alive the same way? It's a very magical experience, the breath. The third reason why we advise people to use the breath, because it's neutral. You can use it when you're happy. You can use it when you're sad. So when you're really upset, if you want to center yourself, go by your breath. Even if you don't know meditation, that's what we do. People, before they go up to a stage to perform, they say, hey, breathe, breathe, to center themselves. Same way. When you're really happy, how do you center yourself? Through your breath. The breath is very neutral. It's wonderful for that characteristic. If you go to the breath, you can always center yourself. And when you breathe mindfully, you will be able to be sure that your mind and body is in one place, and you will be able to experience life clear. You will see the gorilla walking out. You don't get absorbed into any one specific life experience. And the aspect about being mindful and see clearly is very important. In the Zen tradition, there's a story about a dog. One day, a man come by and pick up a big rock and throw at the dog and hit the dog. The dog got hurt really bad, and it got angry, and it started barking and chasing after the rock, because the rock is what's hitting it. You know what I'm talking about? In our life, when we get hurt, do we really try to resolve, transform the source of the problem? Are we running against the rock? So being mindful allows us to see clear. Where is our source of suffering? Where is our source of difficulty? And really go to the source and work with the source. There's a saying that we may not change what's happening to us, but we can change how we feel about what's happening to us. We have total control on that. A lot of times when we think there's a problem, we think it's outside of us. If my friend would be nicer to me, my life would be easier. If my boss would be nicer to me, it would be better for me. But I can still change how I feel about those things that are happening to me. So that's what mindfulness meditation is about. It's about looking at that, how we feel about things. In the Western tradition, there's a saying that says, practice makes perfect. Mindfulness meditation is not anything different. The more we practice, mindfulness should come naturally. It should be our second nature, just like when we're thirsty, we don't think about it, we go and get a drink. So when you practice for a while, when you get a little bit off balance, you automatically know to find your breath, to recenter yourself. It's not something you have to think about. So practice makes perfect. There's a misperception that's saying we have to sit for a long time, we have to practice for a long duration, for an hour. That's not correct. It's about practicing it often. That's what we're talking about. The way to build a wholesome habit is not to sit for an hour or 5 hours a month and then don't do it for the rest of the month. It's about doing it for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes every day or many times a day. And so that's what the practice is about. It's not about sitting for a long duration. It's about doing it often. Before we end, I'd like to re-emphasize the fact that in our life there's always up and down. It doesn't matter how hard you try, but that's not the problem. Don't be concerned about that. Concerned about how we feel about what's happening to us. Suffering is optional, and that's the key.